Hi everyone. So it seems like over the last year or two, there's been a series of biosecurity issues in New Zealand, from myrtle rust to velvet leaf, and obviously the big one for cattle farmers, be dairy or beef at the moment, is Mycoplasma bovis. So in this podcast, we're going to focus a little bit on Mycoplasma bovis, in particular, what to think about when grazing stock with the dairy grazing season coming up. But the same principles will apply to other bugs and lurgs, but also whether they're buying cattle on and so on. And there'll be another podcast online very soon that's going to focus just on general good biosecurity practice. We'll record that hopefully in the next week. So keep an eye out for that one, or an ear out, if you like, for that one as well. But today I've got with me Richard Lavin. Now, Richard, you're Associate Professor in Production Animal Health at Massey University. So. Welcome along. You came highly recommended on this topic. So look, put you on the spot. Why is that, and what's your sort of background?
My background is I've been in New Zealand for 13 years, working at Massey in the farm practice and doing research on animal health and disease, particularly in cattle. Before that, I worked in the veterinary laboratory in Dumfries in southwest Scotland, where I was involved with the diagnosis and identification of endemic diseases. And one of the big diseases is Mycoplasma bovis. So my familiarity with it was how I got into it in the beginning, and then I've just been involved with quite a bit of the stuff that MPI has been doing, mostly advisory stuff on bovis and what to do about managing and controlling it.
So actually, that just triggered. Were you who they originally contacted when they suspected M. bovis was here?
The vets in VetLife, they identified a problem with arthritis that wasn't responding to treatment, and they had a discussion, and they phoned me, and they gave me the history, and from my previous history, it was very clear to me that it was likely to be a mycoplasma, and my comment was, I think it could be Mycoplasma bovis, and it just sounds so like it, but you need to get MPI involved. And so really it was a question of me confirming, I think, what they suspected, and then they went off to MPI, and then MPI unfortunately were able to demonstrate that it was Mycoplasma bovis. And that was a really quite nasty initial outbreak on the dairy farm. 200 plus cows with severe mastitis that doesn't respond to treatment, and 50 or so cows with arthritis that doesn't respond to treatment. So as an outbreak of Mycoplasma bovis, really quite nasty and unusual in terms of the severity.
Okay. So, I mean, we've been told it is the case. It's pretty much endemic nearly everywhere in the world.
Nearly everywhere. I think Norway is one of the few countries. Mm. I know Finland has got a control program where they're trying to eliminate it or trying to monitor and manage it, but it's very difficult. Once it's in the population, it's very difficult to eliminate.
So just on that, and that's another question that's come up, is it likely to have more significant impact in New Zealand because our cattle are naive, or is there any reason that it would be worse here than elsewhere?
No, I think all of the data is pointing towards it being less severe because the major problem is calf respiratory disease, and it's a big component of calf respiratory disease. So if you're a beef farmer or a dairy farmer in Europe, respiratory disease is a big issue. Cows are housed.
Okay.
And then if they're housed in the same environment, so it's just like being at school with everybody's got a cold, they're all spreading it around. If you spread them over a field, you wouldn't get that spread. So we had a survey in dairy diseases in dairy calves, and four calves, about 0.1% of the calves in the population had respiratory disease. So it's very rare as a disease in New Zealand. Mm-hmm. 15-20% of calves would have it in the winter and the winter in Europe and the States. Mm-hmm. So it's there isn't a big respiratory disease for it to join in and become a problem. We have seen some respiratory disease in calves in Southland. Whether that's due to the Mycoplasma bovis, I'm not sure at the moment. I haven't seen enough data. It's possible, but it's unlikely. And I think that really points towards respiratory disease being a minor problem. The issue on dairy farms, is the spread of the mastitis. That could be because all the cows are at the same point in time, so you could get large numbers of cows spreading it. So the big question that we don't know is, if it stays around, are we going to get more of these big outbreaks of the disease like we saw in the very first farm? I'm optimistic that we wouldn't, but we still would get those, and it's a quite a significant problem to the individual farm. And my argument for eliminating it is that it's a devastating disease to have on that individual farm. If you have 200 of your cows go down with mastitis you can't treat, if you're any sort of dairy farmer, you're going to have a, it's going to be absolutely awful. It doesn't matter about the cost. It's simply that, that's a horrible disaster that you want nobody to have.
And so there's various ways it can spread, but one of the main ways is cattle-to-cattle transmission. Obviously, we're coming up to the big time of year with cattle, dairy herds moving, and also a whole lot of dairy cows going off for winter grazing. So graziers don't want to bring the disease onto their farm if they've got their own cattle, or if they've got multiple sources of animals. And obviously, they want to look after their clients' animals. It's just good practice. And obviously, the owners want assurances that their animals aren't going to become infected or cause problems for others. So we're going to get into some question and answers, but in a nutshell, what's some of the key things for both owners and grazers to really concentrate on?
Well, I think the basic issue is biosecurity. If you you've got animals coming from multiple places, you've got to keep them separate. And as the evidence, as the disease outbreak has gone through, it's become more and more clear that the way that it spreads in New Zealand is because you've got cows going from one place to another, mixing with cows. So if you're grazing from multiple sites, you need to make sure that there is no way that those animals can have contact. Now, we talk about over the fence contact, but it, but really you're talking about being in the same paddock in those sorts of environment is the absolute key. But if you make sure that there are no animals from a different source in the paddock next to your cattle, so they're over here and they're separated by good fencing, then you don't need to worry too much about Mycoplasma bovis status, because currently at the moment very few farms are infected. That's probably the most important thing you can do, because all the other stuff, which is are my cows infected, are these cows infected, is a lot more complicated. It's very simple. You say, this paddock here, okay, I've got cows in this paddock here, these paddocks are, have no cows in, and that's the what you're doing is your biosecurity. That's going to be much easier and more effective than doing a test that says possibly, probably these animals are not infected, or because that's what most of the tests will come back with. And the difficulty is saying, okay, I've done a test, does that mean I'm negative? No, it means that you wasn't found.
Good. All right, so we're going to drill into some of that, but you really touched on that. I think the key point we want to get is about that separation of animals and so on. And it sounds almost too simple to be true, but this disease doesn't, I'm not sure what the right term is, but it's not flying in the air, it's not jumping miles, it's that sort of thing.
No, I mean, and it's, and the data, the epidemiological data really clearly shows that there's not, it's not been affected farm and then next door neighbour farm gets infected and there's no contact. It's really been contact with cows. Follow the movement, and that's, and that's been the evidence. And so it doesn't mean that other things can't occur. It means that if you stop your cow movement, you're going to reduce by 90% plus 95%.
So the key, just drill into that a wee bit more, the key transmission routes are basically animal-to-animal saliva transfer?
Snotty, snotty noses and stuff. So it's a respiratory organism and mastitis. So once it got mastitis, and that's what happened in the original outbreak, it was cows that had mastitis spreading it to other cows, and it's huge, it can be hugely contagious. So you've got one cow and then it affects you on a milking platform, it infects seven or eight cows, all get infected using the same cluster.
And they do their own.
So it's really quite contagious then. But obviously that is very clear. Those animals are on the same farm.
The other one though is raw milk is quite a high risk transmission as well. If farmers are buying into rare calves, lambs, or even pigs or something like that.
So from the lambs and the pigs point of view, the pigs, there's no evidence that it's a significant risk to the pigs. To the lambs, you can transmit it to sheep, but it seems to be a dead end and doesn't seem to cause many problems. So it's probably a low risk with those. With calves, it's the same thing as them sucking the mother when they're getting the disease. So yes, you've got to be careful when you're looking at milk. again, as you say, probably the best thing there to do is pasteurise it.
Mm-hmm.
Then you don't have to worry about whether or not the test that you've done on the milk is positive or not. You've pasteurised it, and that's what they do in Australia. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of pasteurisation.
So we are going to touch on this, but the bug itself is for pasteurisation, relatively easy to
kill. Yeah. So yeah. If you've got a normal pasteurisation process, mm-hmm. it will kill Mycoplasma bovis.
But critical on that is limiting animal-to-animal spread, which is a high-risk period coming up.
Yeah, the most important thing then is, when you say preventing animal-to-animal spread, is that we know when animals have moved.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been the problem at the moment, is identifying, okay, well, this farm here, this is an infected farm. Look all the NATE records, and you look at the NATE records, and they don't tell you about a high percentage, particularly of calf movements.
Okay.
And if you've got a calf somewhere in the middle of nowhere, you don't know where it is, it can end up on a dairy farm as a heifer. Mm-hmm. It's got Mycoplasma bovis. It's infected that dairy farm. So it's that we need to have better understanding of animal.
All right, good. We'll come back to that and the importance of people using the system that we've got there specifically for this sort of thing. But look, people at the moment are teeing up grazing or arranging animals to come on. So in both cases, what's the information? Say a sheep and beef farm is going to graze some dairy cows. What should they be asking, given the limitations of the test, but what should they be asking for?
What they should be asking is, really, you're looking at the... I mean, if it's a dairy farm, they'll have dairy farm bulk results.
Mm-hmm.
And that gives us a reasonable level to say that, okay... they haven't found mm-hmm. the disease. Doesn't mean it's not there, but it's got some certainty. And you can get quite complicated in the maths, but you're probably, if you've got with the three tests, you're, say, there's a 50% chance of picking up a positive
mm-hmm.
farm with, if you've got the bulk milk test and two red milk tests.
Okay.
So you ask them what their information is, and they say, yeah. Then you look at, say, okay, where are they?
Mm-hmm.
And we know that Mycoplasma bovis is particularly in the South Island, and it's particularly in the Southland, the Ashburton, and the Southern Canterbury region.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, there you want to have a better understanding of what their risk profile is.
Mm-hmm.
And then, as you say, then you look at the farm history. Do they import lots of animals? Do they move lots of animals mm-hmm. onto the farm? So are they high risk in that way? Sit down and look at that and say, okay, what's the risk? And the answer is it'll probably be very low risk,
because
mm-hmm. that's what most farms in New Zealand are. And then you say, okay, well, how am I? Is this the only one I'm going to manage? I've got my cows over here.
Mm-hmm.
Can I ensure that they don't have any contact
yep.
with my cows? And that, and then once you've done that, you can then you can decide how you're going to manage it. And it should be feasible. Because you shouldn't be bringing strange animals onto your farm and letting them have contact with your cows
mm-hmm.
from any disease perspective or point of view. Just
good
practice. I mean, they could have BVD.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how many grazers test the animals for BVD? And that probably is going to, from a beef farm perspective, is probably going to have a bigger shot. I mean, if you get 26 PIs because you've bought a PI heifer onto your farm,
mm-hmm.
that's devastated your crop. Calf crop quite significantly, whereas probably Mycoplasma bovis from a beef cow or calf farm is probably not going to have a major impact. It might do down the line, mm-hmm. but it's the most likely thing from a beef farmer's point of view is it's going to have just going to get infected, and the cows are not going to show anything, and the calves are not going to show anything.
Mm-hmm.
So it's worth worrying about, but mm-hmm. basic biosecurity for controlling Mycoplasma bovis will actually save you a lot of money
and flows into the potential to actually eradicate the disease.
Exactly.
So we've got that information. Cattle come on, dairy cows come on. Now, you talked about the one big thing is that separation of animals. Yeah. Now, what are we talking there? Are we talking 2 kilometres, 2 metres?
I would say you want to be able, if you can, ideally, you want a paddock between you and each between each group. You can talk about double fencing,
mm-hmm.
2 or 3 metres. That will work because it will reduce the risk of spread. But I think from this perspective, it's better if you've got different groups of cows, if you can manage to have a field between mm-hmm. them. And the key, of course, is that you've got fences that the animals don't jump over.
Yeah.
Because that's what's happened in things. These animals get out, mm-hmm. get into another group, and
yeah.
So that I think is the basic mm-hmm. principle. Double fencing, you say the standard 2 meters apart.
2 meters
apart. Yeah. Is good, but ideally if you can organise it so that
saves
having to put in special fencing yeah. when you can say, well, I've just got a whole paddock between them, yeah. and it really does seem to be close contact that spread it in New Zealand situations.
So something like, I mean, if worst case scenario, you're forced to, it's a 2 meter barrier with a hot tape or something, just to stop that nose to nose contact. It's not going to jump.
The risk of it jumping that far is pretty low.
What about and we'll come on, I mean, that applies not just to animals on your own farm, but also linking in with your neighbours. You want to keep that, again, separation in time or distance if you possibly can.
Yeah, I mean, that's right. And you said the good thing at the moment is we haven't really shown that there's any, that there has been any spread that way. So if you look, Southland Farms and South Canterbury Farms, they're farms on the periphery of all of those, and they've all been checked by MPI, and basically there doesn't seem to have been this is a farmer here
gone over boundary fences.
I mean, couldn't occur, but it doesn't seem in the New Zealand system doesn't seem very likely.
What about separation within a farm over time? So you've grazed a part of a crop with one, they've gone, and then you're going to bring out. Is there a risk of the soil and the desert?
There is a risk that there could be residual left in the in the environment. It's a low one.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't survive very well in the environment. So currently at the moment, the farms that got culled out, they've got a 60-day stand down.
Mm-hmm.
Before they can put cattle back on the place. Mm. Ideally, that's what you would leave.
Mm-hmm.
If it's not direct nose to direct contact, then you have to assess the risk for yourself. So if this farm is from Northland, if these heifers are from Northland and it's from a completely closed farm, it's the only group of heifers you've got on the place, well, that's not a risk. Mm. If you've got them from all over different places, and this is the third group, and they could be potentially from a high risk area, then it's the course. So ideally, you wouldn't do it immediately, but leave in a week or so, and you say, doing it as a normal grazing round or for a thing, then the risk is likely to be low.
Yeah. So, I mean, good practice would be, like with the separation and fences and that, just go that extra mile and try and avoid grazing it if possible. All right. The one other thing that has sort of come up is going, okay, we can keep the animals separate, but we have a tractor and a silage wagon or a bale feeder that moves from one to the other, and cattle being cattle, may lick or slobber on it, etc. I mean, what's the risk there?
Well, again, it's probably a theoretical risk, but it's fairly easy to kill. What they're doing with the tankers and the stock trucks is just washing them down and with citrate, citric acid. What you do is you just say, okay, I've done it for that group of cattle. I just give it a clean down and then give it a scrub of the areas with the office areas with the with the citric acid, and that's, again, ideally you don't go directly from one to the other.
Yep.
If you're a grazier and you've got your own beef farm, well, what I would do is do my cows first and the other one second, because they're obviously going to be higher risk, and then give them a good clean down afterwards.
So just on, I mean, a clean down is important too, because if there's mud and obviously in winter on feeding equipment, there is going to be, it can protect from the
dehydration and it can keep. So it's keeping stuff clean, and the same thing with people coming on. So when the local vet arrives, making sure that if he goes onto the farm, I'll go and see a sick heifer down the bottom, and he cleans his stuff before he goes off and goes and see you.
I mean, it would probably be good practice in a way to just to minimise the time of machinery or an item sitting there that cattle can actually get it, lick it, etc.
So you don't, if it doesn't need to be there, it doesn't need to be there. And so, yeah, again, it's all about balance, because, as you say, you could spend an awful long time and have discussions about a lot of the things, particularly that are happening at Amber. What's the risk? And the risk is very low, but it's good practice. Easy to get into, and just if you can do it, do it. It's the question. If it's going to take you 3 hours to clean the stuff every time you use it, well, that's not a sensible thing. But if it's going to take you 5 minutes to make sure it's clean and give it a quick disinfectant down.
So even with that, I mean, the risk from your gumboots, if you've been in one paddock walking to the other, or your motorbike, you've ridden in one, and we're not talking.
Not expecting to be a huge risk, but again, as I say, if you've been treating say down cow or something, and it's half an hour, all the cows have been slobbing around it, then just take it down to the shed and give it a clean before you take it off to see some more other cattle. And same thing with your gumboots and your wet weathers.
So one of the other things we touched on, sort of time, you know, grazing paddocks and so on, but obviously animals arrive on farm and yards, and obviously you're going to want to keep them separate in the yards at least. Time for one herd offloaded in the yards versus another coming in,
ideally what you're talking about is a day. So if you can, more than a day. If you can't, absolutely just make sure they don't end up in the same airspace. So if you've got a standard set of yards, that really means you have to have them away and gone before the next lot are loaded. You can't say, okay, I've got my one group in one pen and they put them to the next pen over. That's not sensible. They need to be gone, and you can look at the yards and think, is it worth me cleaning them and disinfecting them? And the answer is, if they're really dirty for some reason, but it should be clean when the animals come in and clean when the animals go out. So it's unlikely really it's going to be getting really dirty. So yes, just general cleanliness. Yep.
And that separation and time would apply also for, you know, walking them up a lane to a grazing paddock.
Exactly, yeah. So don't do the obvious things. And again, as you say, those are all low risks. The key thing is making sure that they don't have
to
keep them separate.
Dairy NZ, I think, actually had a suggestion that would cope with a lot of those issues, was to, if possible, have portable ramps and unload in the paddock or nearby, which would be a good way.
Absolutely, if you don't have to run them through it, if you're only using your races to unload them, then if you can unload them directly to where you want them to go, then that's absolutely the key.
And just maybe give the ramp a clean down.
And then, of course, you say the ramp is nice and easy. You know exactly what you need to clean, and it's nice metal, it's not wood, so it's easier to clean and get the brush out and scrub it. It's
one wee job rather than
rather than thinking, I've got which bit of the race do I clean now?
So just on that, you talked about cleaning, so what, something like a water blaster and then just a spray with, was it citric acid?
Citric acid, I mean, any of your disinfectants, your Vercon or anything, that sort of thing, they will kill it. It's really quite easy to kill from a disinfectant point.
Provided you can, the disinfectant contacts
it. Exactly. So it's got to be clean, then you disinfect it.
And this is a question somebody once asked me, but I mean, just overalls in the washing machine is going to be enough to...
That's going to be enough to kill,
if you've been licked by a cow or slobbered on.
Yeah, exactly. Cool.
So, I mean, the as you say, a lot of the stuff is just good practice, whether it was in Bovis was in the country or not. This is the sort of thing we should be touching on. Before I get on to some of the other bits and pieces, I mean, with your experience overseas and having seen what's here, I mean, the NATE system has not worked ideally here. Is that because of the system or because of how we've used it?
I think the system itself, if you've got the tag in and it's recorded, it's worked extremely well. The difficulty is that people are moving animals that aren't tagged, generally calves, and it's a lot. So if I'm selling a calf, the NATE tag costs X dollars. That's a lot of money in a calf. So and no one's coming along and saying, okay, you've had 1,200 calves this year. What's happened to all of these? Can you show me your NATE records? And so it doesn't, and it, and the system is only as good as the worst person. And so if there are people out there, I mean, speeding is a perfect example. If the police weren't out there checking speed limits, there would be people who currently drive at the speed limit who would drive more than the speed limit. Because they say, well, it's quiet, it's zinc, I'm going to do 120. That's fine. The problem is that if they hit somebody, they then that causes significant more damage. And it's not the fault of the speed limit, it's the fault of the actual monitoring of it. And that's the issue. And I think if there's been a gradual improvement in NATE, and a lot of farmers understand what the point is, but there are too many people who think this is just hassle, this is just something that somebody's decided, it's got nothing to do with me. This has highlighted the fact that we don't know enough. And so what happens is, to try and work out where animals have gone and animal movements, you sit down and talk to farmers, and takes weeks for something you should be able to just press a button and it tells you where they've gone. So, and if we are going to absolutely identify mycoplasma bovis in New Zealand, we've got to know where all the animals are going. And I think that's the key. And it is a very useful thing. And it's a bureaucratic nightmare. I mean, I was there when in the UK when they had BSE, and when all of that that drove a lot of the identification. But at the end of the day, what happens is you just get used to doing it. You get used to having this, what you've got to do. And I think the NATE system, the New Zealand the NATE system, is a very good system of its kind. It's really simply that the people look at it and say, well, why do I have to do it? And if you don't have to do it, and if I can sell 200 calves without having to stick a NATE thing in, great.
So I guess there's a silver lining in that M. bovis, we don't want it here, but if we had to get a disease, it's a relatively benign one. But it may have hopefully teed us up to get better with that.
So absolutely a disaster for some people, but generally most of the farms, there's not been a lot of disease seen.
It's a good point, because it's easy to generalize and talk about this isn't too bad overall, but for individual farms, as you say,
if it was like the dairy farms in Southland, if that's what it did on most New Zealand farms, you'd say, well, what on earth are we doing even being the site's a bit bothered about? I mean, there are other mycoplasmas in New Zealand already. But it is the occasional farm.
So, I mean, we've talked, and people focus on the biosecurity, the fencing, the disinfection and stuff, but we really should, from what you're saying there, should be putting almost as much time and energy into getting the NATE recording, the recording right, and that's the long-term insurance.
Knowing where your calves have come from. I mean, that's, say, at the moment, say if you buy a calf from a dealer, do you know where that calf has come from? How can you actually say, know where it's stolen, really? But how can you say where it's come from? He says, okay, he's got records, but where did those ones come from? And so it's difficult to trace back where you got. So you can't go and say, well, I want high quality proven animals, unless then you actually know where they've come from. And it's a worldwide, it's a general problem to say that farmers not buying quality disease free animals, they're just buying cheap animals, not having that sort of information. It's just another example of the sort of information that farmers ought to want to know where they came from, because that tells you a lot about the risk of disease. And if a calf passed through four or five people, that calf is a much higher risk of disease than if it's come directly from a farm. And the best calf rearers was only buy from specific farms, but they aren't the ones that spread it around the diseases around the countryside. They're the pipe, buy a calf from here, put them all together and send them off to there. There's no record of where any animals necessarily came from. So the recording is a very good way of falling back and saying, okay, now we can trace this easily, quickly, where did it come from? So if we get a disease that's a real clinical problem that spreads really effectively, then we can actually follow and monitor and pick up much quicker. We're lucky to say Mycoplasma bovis has been here for a while, but not caused a lot of disease.
And I don't know whether you want to comment on this one, but it's just a bit of... is there evidence, or is it hypothetically possible, that the inattention to NATE recording, or the poor use of it, has actually led to more herds being infected in this outbreak than we would have expected if it had been used efficiently and effectively?
I think what you can say definitively is, if NATE had been properly done, we would be further ahead with identifying tracing infected farms, because you would be able to very quickly identify. Then you've gone those farms to test those. What's happening is it's delaying the process. So it's quite possible, but I would say that probably at the moment what's happened is that it's delayed the process of identifying infected farms. But it's down the line, we could have heifer calves that haven't been picked up on the NATE system, that haven't been, don't know where they've gone. They've gone through multiple people. 2 years' time, they calved down for the first time, and they start excreting. So that the NATE thing definitely means whereas we could probably be reasonably sure, not 100% sure because you never can be, but reasonably sure that we've got all the farms that are going to get infected. The NATE bit means that we can't be sure that in 2 years' time they're not going to suddenly have an infected farm come up, because we've got an animal that we haven't traced.
Yep.
So it's going to mean it's taking longer before we're free of the disease, or we know we're free of the disease.
So let's talk one question. People follow good biosecurity practices on farm. They follow what you've suggested around getting the information, etc. But there may be, a herd comes onto their place and it turns out to actually be an infected herd despite everybody's best efforts. What actually happens then? Those cows won't be able to go home from the grazing place to the dairy platform, or what would likely be?
Well, I think a lot of it depends on, probably what would happen is that the MPI would look at the home farm, and then there would quite possibly be, if it's an issue with grazing availability, then there is the possibility that they could be go back to the home farm, because obviously the home farm is a likely infected farm. But of course, you have a movement restriction in place anyway, so it's a question of feed availability and bits. So so that would be
for the grazer. If they had, say, a beef cow herd, which the beef cows don't tend to be in areas where dairy cows are grazing, but hypothetically. If they've followed what we've talked about, documented it all, they would still be treated as an infected property, or what's that?
I think that would be up to the MPI bit. And I think if you've got documented evidence that the herd's been kept separate, then you would probably be at a lower level than an IP.
Yep.
And then you would do some of, like, for example, some of the farms, the original dairy farms in the... you've got this infected group. This farm was separate from this group, so this farm is a risk property. But you then have a testing regime to identify whether it is infected or whether it's not. So that would be the process.
Yeah. So it's not just following some of these guidelines around separation, but actually documenting that's really important.
And saying yes, and saying this is what we've done. We think this will minimise our chance, and then you can be treated as a separate.
And last question I had before we sort of wrap up, unless there's something else comes up in this one, is just a bit on the testing that's going on. I mean, it's an easy bug to disinfect, kill, get rid of, but it's a pretty hard bug to test for and identify. Is that right? I mean, there's false negatives, is that right?
False negatives, false positives. Mm-hmm. So we've basically got two approaches for testing. The first one is the blood testing for antibodies. So it's saying an animal that's exposed to Mycoplasma bovis will produce antibodies to Mycoplasma bovis. So we have a test for that. The problem with that is that it will miss some animals, because it depends upon when they were infected and how long ago. So they become negative, even though they are still currently infected. The big problem in New Zealand is false positives, where exposure to other bacteria, probably other mycoplasma, means that they are positive and they're not actually. And that it seems to be particularly, it's a problem with beef animals as well as dairy animals, that they go along, test the farm, and they have some animals that are antibody positive, just a few. And what MPI are doing at the moment is working out how many animals you need to be positive before you really think that the herd is positive. So it's not a good test for individual animals. So if you've got a bull that's been off to somebody else's farm, and you just testing that bull for Mycoplasma bovis antibodies isn't a good thing. You need large numbers of animals, and it's a herd level test. So the only thing it's going to be able to say is it likely your herd's been exposed? And you can say yes or no. But it has to be a lot of animals. I mean, we're probably talking 100 or so. It's not 5 or 6. So it's a really big testing regime. Mm. And it isn't at an individual level. So the individual level, you're looking then saying, okay, we've got infection and we've got respiratory infection, and we've got other infections. Mm-hmm. These are two major ones. So you can take a milk sample or you take a nasal swab. If an animal's got clinical signs, so it's either got respiratory disease mm-hmm. or a mastitis, then the PCR test, which is what we use, will be very good.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is if you're trying to identify whether a farm is infected or not and there's no obvious clinical signs, then the PCR for the nasal swab, you have to mm-hmm. test an awful lot of animals before you can be sure. So, and that's a very difficult thing to do. So it's not something that you're going to jump at the chance. Say, I've got 250 steers. Mm-hmm. Have they got mycoplasma bovis? Stick a nasal swab down every 250. That's going to take a very long time and it's very expensive.
And you need to do it several times.
And you probably need to do it several times to be absolutely sure. Then the other one is the bulk milk, which mm-hmm. is the big advantage of bulk milk is you're testing you're testing the whole herd. And if you've got an animal excreting, you can probably pick up 1 in 400, mm-hmm. that sort of number. So if they're excreting the bulk bacteria, then you can pick it up with the PCR pretty effectively on most dairy farms. The problem is that the animal's not necessarily always going to be in the tank,
mm-hmm.
so they could have mastitis or lameness or other things, and then they're not in the bulk milk.
Mm-hmm.
So ideally you want to test the animals alongside that aren't going into the tank as well. And the other problem is that these animals that aren't clinically infected, they will excrete on and off.
Okay.
So probably looking at the figures, at this time of year, you're probably going to pick up, if a farm's positive, you're going to pick up about 15% of the farms mm-hmm. with one test. Mm-hmm. So that, and so you then get into complicated probabilities and and saying, okay, yeah, what's the chances of me being picked up being negative? And you say, okay, well, you've got to take 19 goes before you can be 95% sure. But that's not the way any testing regime works. It's the fact is that if you are positive and you do 3 or 4 tests, it's more than 50% likely you're going to pick them up. So repeated ongoing mm-hmm. tests will identify whether you're infected or not. And obviously once you get into the new calving season, the chances of finding it goes up because of the stress of calving means that they're more. So what that does is it gives you, at a herd level, a reasonable
mm-hmm.
thing that's saying, I think I'm negative. The more you do, the more sure you are. Mm-hmm. But you can also look at your own individual thing and say, well, am I in an area? Have I bought calves?
Mm-hmm.
Have I bought livestock from other places? And so you can work with your vet or other advisor, and they can do a risk analysis for you. And so you can say, oh, I'm very low risk and I've got 3 herd tests. That means I'm extremely mm-hmm. unlikely to be. So it's well worth me considering what to do. So you can do that. Obviously, the bulk milk is therefore really, it has two roles, one of which is at an individual farm level giving you reassurance, mm-hmm. but not complete confidence
mm-hmm.
that you're negative. But at a whole country level, it tells you that the level of disease in the country is very low.
So every dairy farm in the country has been having bulk milk and
3 tests, of which
so far there's been,
I think it's 2 or 3, I don't know exactly the number,
that have turned up,
and they've both been in areas where
so there's been no black swan popped up out of the blue.
Exactly. That was the key thing with that is that they wanted to do the whole herd. Yes, they'd like nice to identify some positive farms, but you're not going to identify all of them, but you're saying, okay, we're going to pick up a good percentage mm-hmm. of them, and more importantly, if there is a cluster of farms that we don't know, the odds are that we're going to identify that cluster. If it's 3 or 4 farms, if we're going to identify that cluster. So with that, with our testing regime, and the answer is we haven't found any of those. Mm. We've just confirmed that the clusters that we already
knew.
So it's at an individual farm level. What for most farmers, what it's turned into, that I'm very unlikely to have mycoplasma bovis, to I'm extremely unlikely to have mycoplasma bovis, which isn't really much of a difference, but it's a nice reassurance that yes, that what you you're in Port Waikato, and you thought, you look at your records, we don't think we've got likely to have it. We've been tested three times.
I mean, I think overall it's a reassurance for people who may be taking cows on for grazing that the expectations about the disease are, it's panning out the way you thought. You know, it's not jumping here, there and everywhere. It's not all over
the place.
That's
exactly it.
The risk of, if animals are allowed to move, the risk of them having it is likely to be
below. And I think that's the key.
All right. Look, I just looking at the time, I've gone through my questions. Anything else we haven't covered that you want to?
I think anything else? No. Yes. I mean, so I suppose the only thing really is the bull mating.
Yep.
And the problem with the bull system we have in New Zealand is it's completely ridiculous in terms of biosecurity.
Yeah.
Sending bulls out onto farms, bringing them back, and sending them out onto other farms is a recipe for disaster. Mm-hmm. In terms of disease. Mm-hmm. The advantage in New Zealand is we don't have a lot of these bull transmitted diseases like Campylobacter that would be transmitted that way. But really, farmers shouldn't be getting bulls onto their farm that have been mating other things. I mean, you say it's the best way of transmitting disease that anybody's ever invented. So
the bad news for bulls is they should be single use.
They should be single use. Yeah, single use. If you're leasing them out, if you're using them on the farm, well, that's fine. Individual, they can just carry on going until they get too old or they get too lame.
Service bulls should be single.
So if you're getting bulls in from a bull producer, make sure they haven't been used by anybody else.
Well, excellent. All right. Look, for more information, people, there's quite a lot on the MPI website under their MBOVA section, but also both Beef and Lamb New Zealand and Dairy NZ have a number of resources, and we've actually collaborated very closely on this and shared material, because basically it's not a dairy issue, it's more in the dairy issue, but it's a beef issue as well, and certainly with grazing. And just this morning I saw we've actually got a joint fact sheet out on all the key talking points that we've covered here, and from a quick read of it, it's exactly what you've just told us, Richard, so that's a good start. So we'll link to that in the description of this podcast, but as always you can call Dairy NZ on their 0800 number, or Beef and Lamb New Zealand on our 0800 number, and if we don't have the information, we'll find it out, and that may mean a call to Richard Laven. So look, thank you very much for your time, Richard.
You.
It's pulled you away from a wet and windy and thundery day here in Palmerston North, but it's been well worth it. Thank you very much.
Thank you.